Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome, everybody. Happy Tuesday. This is Dr. Michael Vandersheldon here, and today we are talking about a very interesting topic. This isn't, gotta tell you, it's kind of a weird feeling lecturing on this topic, and we're talking about medical cannabis today. And I never really thought I would ever be sitting here talking about this because, really, before a couple of weeks, I really had no idea, I didn't know any of the effects of medical marijuana and the therapeutic, the medicinal benefits that this actually plant has to offer. And so today we're going to go deep into that whole topic. And when we first look into this, we got to look at the basics of cannabis. And cannabis consists of over 100 different cannabinoids. And the cannabinoids, the two primary research cannabinoids are THC and CBD, THC being tetrahydrocannabinol, and CBD, cannabidiol. So we're just going to, for this sake of the talk, we're just going to talk about THC and CBD. But the marijuana plant, the cannabis plant, actually also contains tons of terpenes and flavonoids. And these actually give them their unique color and their smell. For example, there's some strains that smell like lemon, purple, lavender. And as an example, the main terpene in lavender is linalool. And that's actually the same thing that's in the lavender smelling marijuana plant. And it gives it that relaxing and calming property. And then another part of the cannabis plant is the hemp, and that actually is made up in the stems of the plant, and that's used as different fibers. And so the definition of marijuana, medical marijuana altogether, is the use of the whole unprocessed marijuana plant and its pure extracts without use of toxic pesticides and fertilizers to treat a disease or improve a symptom. So this is completely 100% natural. This plant's been around for over 5,000 years. And it's even been said that our founding fathers, even George Washington, grew over 100 hemp plants. And really, this plant has really caught on because of the medicinal properties it has to offer. And so throughout our history, it's been used for insomnia, menstrual cramps, nausea, muscle spasms, depression. But then something happened in the 20th century. It became very controversial, and the medicinal use quickly faded away, and it really just kind of stemmed a huge rocky history in the U.S. Because what happened is in the 20th century, the medicinal demand went down, but the recreational use went up, which increased the consumer demand. And you got these two substances, the CBD and the THC. And the CBD has most of the health properties of marijuana. The THC is more of the psychoactive ingredient. It's the one that recreational users are often looking for. And so since recreational use gained very high popularity in the 20th century, there started to be this breeding out of the CBD substance in marijuana with more THC substances because that's what people wanted. And you know, our government really wanted to get rid of these kind of hippie pot smokers, if you will, in the 60s. And they even sponsored a film, a propaganda film called Reefer Madness. And they basically depicted anyone who smokes marijuana as this crazy drug-addicted zombie. And so they really tried to spread this propaganda that these weed smokers were just very bad news. And what's interesting is that why is this all happening in the 60s? Well, smoking marijuana really became an act of political disobedience, an act of political rebellion against the Vietnam War. And every time I think about the Vietnam War, you know, I think of a movie such as Forrest Gump, where you see kind of like that hippie population who were against the war, but that's not what the U.S. government wanted. They didn't want this group of people going against their system, but also too, so they went after what they did as a hobby, which was recreational use of smoking marijuana. And Congress then, under Nixon, they passed the Comprehensive Drug Abuse Prevention and Control Act. And that basically allowed them to pretty much jail anybody who was smoking marijuana and other drugs. But it was just a way to kind of again, it was kind of a propaganda act to kind of get rid of that hippie generation, to get rid of the people who were against the Vietnam War at the time. And so currently, medical marijuana has kind of been doing a comeback in our world, you know, so, and CBD is starting to become a lot more active ingredient in the medical marijuana plant, because now this whole medicinal use is gaining way more attention as more and more studies are coming out. And this medicine, literally, especially legal medical marijuana, it's generating billions. In 2015, this is only when just like Colorado and a few states had legal use, they netted $3 billion in just 2015 alone. Currently, medical marijuana is legalized in 29 states and the District of Columbia, and that's for medical use. For recreational and medical use, 8 states, and 3 states are just passed, the most recent ones in the November 2016 election. But these 8 states that allow both medical and recreational use is Colorado, which was the first state to get passed. You have Washington State, Oregon, California, Nevada, Alaska, Maine, and Massachusetts. So the Pacific Northwest, the West Coast, and the Northeast, as well as Alaska. But now, again, it's undergoing a complete revolution, because if you look at nationwide polls, and I understand that polls aren't completely, you know, not always 100% accurate, but just looking at these nationwide polls that are published, the majority of people actually support recreational and medicinal marijuana. It's that simple. And if you're looking at just Americans, adult Americans, greater than 4 out of 10 Americans have personally tried marijuana themselves. 60%, really over 60%, support full-on legalization, both recreational and medicinal. And in 2013, 76% of the physicians in the USA supported the use of medical marijuana. And then what's interesting, too, is in 2014, you may have seen this. It's a popular cannabis documentary. It's titled Weed. It's a 2-part documentary series. And basically what happened, it was funded by CNN's chief medical correspondent and neurosurgeon. His name is Dr. Sanjay Gupta. And after he did this entire documentary series, he basically made a highly publicized reversal on his stance on marijuana, because before that he was completely against any type of legalization. After actually looking into it and looking at unbiased perspectives, he completely reversed his stance. And let's just look at this, because the big problem in the U.S. particularly is the classification of cannabis, because it's illegal at the federal level, and it makes it very difficult then to do research. And in addition, the DEA classifies cannabis as a Schedule 1 controlled substance. Now, that's basically the worst type of schedule you can label a drug, and this puts marijuana now in the same category as heroin, LSD, meth, and ecstasy. So they literally put marijuana in this same Schedule 1 controlled substance category. And the definition of a Schedule 1 controlled substance, what it really boils down to is it means there's a high potential of abuse with no therapeutic benefit. Now, they already know from the research we have that both of those do not qualify marijuana in this category, but still it's put in this category by the DEA. And that classification being a Schedule 1 controlled substance, that offers a lot of pros and cons. And a couple pros is that small shops and dispensaries are actually able to thrive now because the government can't really get involved with this. And also, too, since it's illegal at the federal level, medical marijuana cannot be transported across state lines. So what that does is that actually halts big businesses, big pharma, and it halts them from actually getting into this business because they can't really distribute it statewide. But it still remains incredibly enticing. So even though big pharma can't get their hands on it yet, don't get me wrong, they are very enticed by this, because this is just one example. 1 acre of marijuana is worth 2,000 times more than 1 acre of tobacco. It's worth 13,000 times more than a cornfield, a 1 acre cornfield, and 43,000 times more valuable than 1 acre of soybeans. So it is incredibly valuable, and there's incredible financial interest for these big business groups, big pharma. But a couple of cons of this being illegal at the federal level is that, again, it forces these dispensaries, these local businesses, to go all cash because they can't physically put money in their account. They can't take credit for something that's illegal at the federal level because banks have federal jurisdiction. And again, they also force these businesses now that it's illegal at the federal level. It forces these businesses now to have around-the-clock surveillance. So these people, these employees working at these dispensaries, a lot of them feel like almost second-class citizens because they're always being watched. So it creates kind of a weird and ultra-controlled dynamic. But when you're looking again at the classification, that's medical marijuana. Now, CBD oil, which is just one of the specific types of cannabidiols in the marijuana plant, CBD has no psychoactive property. So it absolutely does nothing mind-altering. But even in December of this year, the DEA announced the reclassification of CBD, and they now put CBD in the same category as a Schedule I controlled substance. So medical marijuana as a whole, and just the CBD portion, which literally has no psychoactive property. So it has no potential for abuse. You don't get hooked on this stuff. And it has massive medicinal benefits. All of this should be a reason why it should not even be labeled in one of these Schedule I controlled substance categories. But the DEA did the complete opposite stance. And so, again, there's no psychoactive component. It cannot make you high, and it has many medicinal uses. So it's really just it's really quite a shame that they would put this in that category. And I just want to read you a quote, and I want you to guess who said this. And I quote, "Marijuana, in its natural form, is one of the safest therapeutically active substances known to man. By any measure of rational analysis, marijuana can be safely used within a supervised routine of medical care." Now, ironically, the person that actually said this quote was the DEA administrative law judge, Francis Young, because the law judge of the DEA actually wanted to unschedule this substance altogether, which they really should now that they know all this research about it. But no, the DEA, the government, did the exact opposite and put it at the highest category for potential abusing of drugs. Now, I'm not an expert in medical marijuana, and so what I did is I looked at a lot of people who are experts. And for instance, there's a PhD, Dr. Margaret Getty. And she's Stanford educated. She had her own private practice in California, and she studied pathology. But then she realized the power of this cannabis plant, and so she actually started a clinic in Colorado called the Getty Whole Health Clinic, and she's the owner and founder of that. And so she really is like one of the biggest experts in this category. And a quote she has is, "CBD is not only non-psychoactive, it is remarkably non-toxic. Saying that it has no medical use and is highly dangerous just flies in the face of fact, science, and knowledge. It's such a regressive move, it's certainly very disappointing." Now, she said that because putting it as a Schedule I drug means that it is dangerous, that it is highly addictive, that it does have no medical benefit, all of which are false, especially when you're talking about just CBD, period. And so what it really boils down to, and what a lot of these experts are saying, is that the DEA is highly influenced and highly controlled by the pharmaceutical industry. And basically, if you make CBD a Schedule I controlled substance, that benefits absolutely nobody but the companies that are competing directly against it. For example, the pharmaceutical companies. If some people now find out that this substance has all these medicinal benefits, they're going to use less pharmaceuticals. And oh my gosh, they actually did studies on this, and that's exactly what they found. Because when you're in a Schedule I category, that means you have no federal funding for any type of legitimate, big-time research. So a lot of these, independent research companies have to go through a lot of these regulatory hoops to actually get research done. And so, again, the drug companies, when you have a drug company, they have a legal mandate to turn a handsome profit. So a lot of times profits are a lot greater than the actually medical benefits that they have to offer. So if a drug company, if any company in the big business sector is coming up with a new product or a new drug, the first thing that's on their minds is, can it turn a handsome profit? And a lot of times that's a lot more important than if it's actually the most beneficial for someone at that time, because profits always trump everything else. And so, and I quote, "We know that it's popular recreationally, which of course competes with the alcohol industry. Hemp also provides excellent biofuel. It actually competes with the petroleum industry. It provides excellent fiber for clothing. It competes with lumber, which is one of the reasons apparently why hemp was restricted earlier in the 20th century." And this is again by Margaret Getty, the PhD, who has her own office now. And again, I quote, "Medicine, recreation, food, fuel, and fiber. What else can do all those things? Question mark. And so what she's saying is that this plant has so much to offer that, and it creates such a huge conflict of interest for these other big businesses that they don't want this getting out, because people return to this over the products that they're manufacturing themselves. Now, ironically, synthetic marijuana, which is basically where they get this synthetic powder imported from Asia, and it actually causes, it binds 1,000 times more strongly to our cannabinoid receptors in our body than regular, you know, medical grade marijuana. But this synthetic stuff is completely artificial. And ironically, the DEA actually scheduled synthetic marijuana as a Schedule 3 drug, not a Schedule 1 drug like actually real marijuana. And a Schedule 3 drug means that there's a lot less potential for abuse, basically meaning it's a lot better for you, which could not be further from the truth. Because here's the deal. You can overdose on synthetic marijuana. You can't overdose on real, actual, medical-grade marijuana. Synthetic marijuana is void of any healing component, and it has serious side effects. And just to name a few, you're talking stroke, brain damage, seizures, kidney and heart problems. But when you're talking about a synthetic substance that's actually chemically altered from its natural form, now that can be patented. And that creates a huge conflict of interest, and it kind of makes sense now that why the DEA would put that as a Schedule 3 drug, synthetic marijuana, but actually the real marijuana plant with tons of medicinal benefits, they put that as a Schedule 1. It's a complete huge conflict of interest. And so we have, when we're talking about marijuana, we got to talk about the opioid and prescription drug epidemic, because in 2014, that was the year currently that had the most overdose deaths in the U.S., and 6 of those 10 deaths were from opioids. And so at the worst case scenario, if you take too many opioids, it can cause death, and not to mention massive addiction. The worst case scenario for taking cannabis is getting a hazy or withdrawn or unresponsive feeling. And again, all of that stuff that cannabis can cause, it's temporary. Meaning once the drug wears off, that hazy, that withdrawn feeling, that unresponsive feeling that you can feel when you're on cannabis, it goes away once the drug wears off. Opioids, it's not the case. And in fact, medical marijuana, it's way less addictive than alcohol, cocaine, heroin, tobacco, all of those things. And none of this makes sense how they classify this. And so, prescription drug epidemic. We got to talk about prescription drugs, because in the states where marijuana is legal, opioid overdose deaths have decreased by 20% after the first year of being legalized. They decreased 25% after the second year being legalized, and they've decreased 33% by years 5 and 6 of legalization, which is huge. So the more you're allowing people to actually freely obtain medical marijuana, they consume less dangerous opioids, opium, morphine, all of those things, and other prescription drugs. And according to the Health Affairs Journal and the Washington Post, legal states where marijuana is legal, prescription pain meds in all categories fell sharply. And so to look at a few of those figures, and I quote, in the 17 states with a medical marijuana law in place by 2013, prescriptions for painkillers and other classes of drugs fell sharply compared with states that did not have a medical marijuana law. The drops were quite significant. In medical marijuana state, the average doctor prescribed 265 fewer doses of antidepressants each year, 486 fewer doses of seizure medication, 541 fewer anti-nausea doses, and 562 fewer doses of anti-anxiety medication. But most strikingly, the typical physician in a medical marijuana state prescribed 1,826 fewer doses of painkillers in a given year. And this is according to W. David Bradford, a PhD, in the Health Affairs Journal. So that is absolutely huge. And this is each doctor. So all those figures, you multiply that by all the doctors in that practicing area, that is a remarkable difference in the amount of prescription drugs that are being filled in the legal marijuana states. And so that just tells you that Big Pharma does not want that. They don't want to lose business, which means that they're going to try to maintain that federal illegal mandate. Now, and I quote, "Once there is greater availability of marijuana, the death toll from opiates goes way down. We've also seen some data that there's less alcohol being used on the roads." And again, that's from Dr. Margaret Getty. So again, you're going to be using all these harmful substances, whether it's prescriptions, opiates, alcohol, all of that goes way, way down when we're able to obtain medicinal benefits from marijuana. And just because I'm a sports guy, you got to look at, in just in the NFL alone, they just did a huge, massive lawsuit, and it alleges that NFL teams are giving painkillers to their players recklessly. And so it's funny because in the NFL, you're not able to control pain by medical marijuana, but you can pretty much take as many painkillers and opiates as possible, which is completely, completely unacceptable. And the NFL has a team culture that disregards both player safety and federal guidance on handling narcotics and painkillers. And according to this news headline, one of the plaintiffs, who is actually the widow of a former Baltimore Raven named Charles Evans, he testified in a deposition that her husband would take an unlabeled envelope full of Motrin and Percocet given to him by the team's trainers. So these NFL teams are literally just handing out by the envelope of these unmarked Percocets, Motrins, everything, and just trying to get their players to basically handle all of their pain that way instead of going for a more safe option like medical marijuana. So, right now in the NFL, just while we're on the subject, each team has prescribed 5,777 doses of anti-inflammatories and 2,270 doses of narcotics in each and every year since 2012. And considering that each team has 53 players, that basically amounts to 150 doses of drugs per player per year. Now that's average. So the people are taking a lot less, there's going to be people taking a lot more in 1 year of 150 doses of narcotics and pain relievers. It's unbelievable. And so how does marijuana actually act on the system? And this is the coolest thing because this is really only recently talked about a journal of science in 1992, and it's called the Human Endocannabinoid System. And the primary function of this endocannabinoid system is homeostasis. It's to restore balance to the body, to regulate the body's functions. And so what happens is that your body actually secretes natural cannabinoids and it releases them to interact with cannabinoid receptors that are found in virtually all tissues of the body. So your body will release these cannabinoids. These cannabinoids then bind to these cannabinoid receptors in the body, and it restores balance to the body. So our body actually makes these naturally. But these receptors are found in almost all tissues. You're talking your brain, your lungs, your liver, your kidneys, your immune system. And so these are just a few of why there's so many therapeutic and psychoactive properties of marijuana. It's because it basically binds to all of these cannabinoid receptors in the body. And so, again, when you're looking at this, there's about 30 times more cannabinoid receptors in our body than any other receptor, which is crazy. And that basically suggests that we've been kind of designed to make use of this plant for a long, long time and never really since mankind. So this tells us that there's a vast history of the marijuana, and not only us, but in other mammals as well. They have tons and tons of endocannabinoid receptors in their body. So it shows that we were kind of meant to be utilizing this plant, if you will, for many of these medicinal benefits. And as an example of how this human endocannabinoid system works is, like, let's look at our nervous system, for example. Because when someone gets a seizure, they're in an overstimulated and overexcited state. So basically, there's an overexcitement of the receiving nerve cell, and it leads to a seizure. But what happens is that one of your endocannabinoid or multiple endocannabinoid receptors in your body detects this overstimulation. And so then what it does is your body then develops and makes its own human cannabinoids to dial down these hyperstimulated impulses to restore balance to the body. Now, that's in a normal person. Obviously, someone with epilepsy or with seizures, they obviously have a default in this system, which means that they could actually theoretically benefit more from medical marijuana to actually override whatever's going on so they can deal with seizures naturally. And again, homeostasis and balance, because what cannabinoids do is they reduce pain. They reduce this nerve stimulation. They reduce seizures. They reduce muscle spasms, all from the interaction of these endocannabinoid receptors that our body naturally has. And so, again, this just tells us that since we have an abundance of cannabinoid receptors in our body, it just shows us that we were probably designed to make use of this plant, and it triggers a system that's deep down inside of us that's been present ever since the beginning of mankind, which is very, very cool. And so, what we do know, because this has only got recently studied in 1992 when it first actually became public about this endocannabinoid system, this vast, crazy, complex system in our body. But what we actually do know is that cannabinoid receptors play important roles in metabolic regulation, in cravings, in pain, anxiety, bone growth, immune function. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. And this is the reason why marijuana can provide so many multiple functions in our body without being toxic, because it works on a natural system in our body. And again, according to Dr. Margaret Getty, who has, you know, she's probably the number one expert in this field, she says that, I quote, "So many pain medications are damaging to the stomach, to the gut. The cannabis doesn't hurt the gut. It helps heal the gut. There is nothing else that does that. It won't hurt the organs. It won't hurt the liver. It won't hurt the kidneys. Ibuprofen, people can't stay on that for months and years. They can stay on cannabis. As we know as well, there is no known lethal dose for cannabis, whether it's THC or CBD or a combination. A person couldn't die from it even if they were really trying hard. There's nothing you can say that about. It offers so much to people on a medical level." End quote. So again, there's no lethal dose of cannabis, but yet they still schedule it as a Schedule 1 controlled substance. It's absolutely criminal. But again, she goes on to say, "There is nothing like this in medicine. There's nothing that I can prescribe that comes close to what this can do for people." And so again, when we're looking at this, there's a lot more things we got to talk about. We got to talk about certain strains, certain other, we got to talk about the THC, the CBD in particular. And also we got to talk about the self-limiting effects, because they're dose-dependent effects, meaning that the dose is crucial. And if you look at a bell-shaped curve, that means that there's a sweet spot, if you will. There's that perfect dose to get the most effectiveness without the side effects. And so dosing becomes very, very important. So for people looking for natural pain relievers, this literally can be quite the answer. And from everything I've read so far, it's very promising. But again, the doses have to be very specific. So you've got to work with a doctor that specializes in cannabis use, you know, to be completely safe and to avoid any of the psychoactive side effects that people may not desire. And so tonight, we're going to go over all of the strains, how to actually take it, what are the steps to do to actually get a medical marijuana card, and we're just going to talk about different options there, because again, I'm not the expert, And I'm going to be talking about what all the experts in the field are saying, and so we can really have a good open discussion tonight. So, guys, thank you for listening. Have a great rest of your Tuesday, and I will see you next week. Dr. Mike out.